Chapter 8, Losing My Vision. This chapter introduces a series on losing my eyesight. In it, I reflect on the nature of vision, what it is, how it can be maintained, and how unique inner visions can be valued. Just as the geographic landscapes described in earlier chapters had changed when I revisited them, so too, when I began to lose my eyesight, the outer world literally became no longer visible to me as it had been before. I soon began to create a counterposing internal vision so that my sense of my own value would remain intact. I think we are all, to some extent, blind, to some extent, sighted. And each of us moves in a world of unique inner vision, an interior landscape that is composed of meanings, of sights and sounds, and feelings deeply held. I am losing my eyesight. I am not sure if my vision loss will continue for a few years more or indefinitely. Already my visual world has changed. I no longer see clearly objects at a distance, trees, buildings, street signs. There are many things I simply do see, small lines, light colors on light backgrounds. In the mid-distance, the definition in people's faces disappears, as do the titles of books on shelves a few feet from me. I need magnifiers to read, or I need to enlarge the print using a computer printer or a large screen, because normal-sized print looks tiny to me. Objects that move quickly into my peripheral vision often hit a blind spot and then suddenly appear before me, startling me. These might include a car pulling away from a curb, a person coming into a room from my side, a grocery bag at my feet, an open cabinet door. I will step on the bag and bump into the cabinet door because I do not see them. I have gotten used to bumping into things and to scanning from left to right when I drive, or when I enter a room looking for my baseball hat or my pen or a glass I have left on a surface somewhere. I look very carefully at objects directly in front of me so that I will cut them or move them properly, so I can cut carrots without cutting my hand or put a pen into its cap without missing the hole. Sometimes I will not see a glass on a table because I see right through it. I do not see the edges. Similarly, I have to be careful on stairs because the edges are not clear to me. In low or less than bright light, I will not see details or colors well. I will misdial a phone number because I do not see the markings on the keypads. I will not appreciate fully the color of a shirt I am wearing. I find I often stare intently at the controls on the washing machine in my basement, trying to turn the knob to the proper setting. At night in the dark, I will not see the edges of a path I am walking on, and so I may lose my way. I have to shine a flashlight on my black dog when I am walking him in order to see him. I am always reaching for flashlights and lighted magnifiers and turning on all the lamps in a room, so I will be comfortable and better able to see. Sometimes it will take a while, even in broad daylight, for an image to compose itself in front of me, so I can know what it is. Is that a truck in my view, a half block away, for instance, or a building against the sky? Recently, when my lover and I were visiting a house for sale in the neighborhood, she bumped her head into a low doorway when coming in from the yard, fell down, and called to me to help her. From a distance, I thought she was a garbage can overturned and lying on the ground. I saw a man down the street with a parrot on his shoulder, who turned out to be a woman with a ponytail. While driving on the highway in the rain, I saw a monster shaped like a dinosaur emerge from the mist by the roadside. It was a highway exit sign. Each of these misperceptions has disturbed me because I did not see something for what it was. I no longer take my vision for granted. During the past year, my vision has changed for the worse, in ways I notice about once every 2 months. As a result, I am very aware that what I see now is a temporary state. I often feel sad about what is happening to my vision. But my major problem is not that I focus on what I no longer see, but that I fear that in the future I will not be able to see what I see now, blurred as it is. I worry what will happen to me when my vision gets worse. What if I can't see at all? What if I can't read, can't clean house, can't write, can't drive, can't walk distances as I do now, looking around and appreciating the scenery? What if I can't see the flowers in my yard or the plants I am trying to grow or take care of my pets? What if the colors disappear and the flowers that now look blurred to me no longer have any color? Several years ago, I took up birdwatching. What if I can no longer see the birds? Already, their outlines and colored markings look broken to me when I view them through my binoculars. What if my appearance gets bad because I cannot see myself well enough? What if I begin to wear pink and no longer look like myself or like a lesbian? What if people feel uncomfortable around me and have no use for me because I cannot see them? Will I get mugged on the street? Will people patronize me? Sometimes I just want to close my eyes and go blind suddenly, so that I will know what it will be like and that I will be okay. It was only a year ago that my vision became much worse than it had been. During the 2 previous years, I had noticed dark floaters in front of my eyes, small round discs that covered the blue sky with what looked like fine, splattered drops of mud. The print on the page had become small, but last spring the changes in my vision became more pronounced. I noticed that the grills on the cars and trucks suddenly looked wavy and irregular, and like they had chunks taken out of them. This made the cars look smashed in. Soon the letters on street signs also looked like they had chunks taken out. It looked to me like all the straight lines around me had acid thrown on them, or like they were dissolving underwater. Telephone poles, power lines, edges of windows and doors on houses, lines marking crosswalks and the lanes on highways all looked bent and as if parts of them were dissolving away. I was very upset by what I was seeing. The outer world looked to me like it had been in an accident or car wreck. What I saw outside, I felt, was happening to my eyes. Sometimes I thought they, too, had acid thrown on them, although they did not hurt me. I felt damaged and very alone, and as if I were walking around in an unusual and partly destroyed external world, seeing what no one else was seeing. 2 kinds of changes that started last spring affected me most of all. First was reading. Increasingly, the print on the page looked small and bent, and the letters looked like they had bites taken out of them. They looked as if they were underwater and had many dark cobweb shapes floating around on top of them. I found that I could not read except with strong magnifiers. With these magnifiers, I could read only a few words at a time. My reading became very slow. I could not scan. I started to cry. Without the magnifiers, I could not read labels on packages. Signs in supermarkets, street signs, unless I was right under them, my own handwriting, unless I wrote big and dark. I could not walk into a bookstore and browse or keep up with the new books. The thought of reading an entire book seemed an immensely large undertaking. I felt my reading world was slipping away. I had not realized before how important reading was to me. It was one thing for the grills on the cars to look smashed in, but I feared that not reading meant I would not be able to have an inner world. I would not be able to bring in information and to nourish myself and create a world I could be in even if I could not see. In addition, my main work is writing. It is always dependent upon my seeing words and phrases in front of me so I can know how to revise them. I type and retype my pages many times, reading them over using a visual aesthetic that is very connected to a voice in my head. This inner written voice is different from my spoken voice. As my reading became difficult, I worried what would happen if I could no longer see my writing. I felt I would lose my ability to do it. Looking at the cracked letters on my pages and in books by others made me sad. The breaking of these letters seemed to represent more destructiveness than when the cars looked smashed in. The second change that made me cry was the blurring away of people's faces, the fading out of the details of features, skin tones, and facial outlines. When walking down the street, I noticed I was seeing the clothes and forms of people, but their faces looked bleached out. So I stared at the faces, trying to make out what they looked like. I found that people then said hello to me, as if they thought I knew them, embarrassing me. I told myself to look down quickly, because people usually avert their gaze from strangers on the street. Even from the distance of across a room, as at a party or across a seminar table when teaching, I found that people's faces looked washed out or in shadow, their features small dark spots. In classes, moving hair-like floaters passing over the students' faces blocked out parts of them. If light came from behind a person, as when a friend sat across from me in my living room with a bright window behind her, her face would turn totally dark. I would try to reposition myself so the light came from behind me. I did not like the feeling of not being able to see someone with whom I was talking. I noticed that at a distance on the street, the outlines of people's faces sometimes looked geometric and two-part, as if the top of the face was separate from the bottom, and the bottom was a triangle set off to one side. The outlines looked like they had chunks taken out of them, as had the cars and letters. The facial features looked smashed in. I was frightened by the grotesqueness I was seeing. But most of all, I was upset that increasingly I could not see clearly the faces of people closest to me, whom I usually see from just a few feet away. I was glad one day when at the beach with my lover, Hannah, sitting 2 inches from her in bright sunlight, I was able to see clearly that she had wrinkles. Usually at home, her face will look in shadow to me even across the dining table, and I cannot see the expression or light in her eyes that I am used to. Sometimes I have looked in the mirror at my own face and felt horrified, knowing I am not seeing all that is there. Do I have eyebrows? Do my eyes truly look so hollow? What do I really look like, I wonder? What do others see when they look at me? These changes in what I see continue. I have become used to many of them. I am learning to walk around in a world where people have little definition in their faces. I am learning, even with those close to me, to talk to a blur in the distance, although I do try to get as close as I can most of the time and to turn lights on. I want to see the faces of people I know for as long as I can. Generally, I have to remind myself to see as much as I can, to use my eyesight, to drive when I safely can, to plant the flowers I want to see grow, to find ways to read. I have to remind myself to stay in the present, where I can deal with things, rather than in the future, where I simply have fears. The eye condition I have is called birdshot retinochoroidopathy. It is an inflammation in the back of my eyes that started 3 years ago. I first noticed it when I began to see increasing numbers of floaters, those small dark circles and cobweb shapes, spinning before my eyes, that caused white pages and light backgrounds to look dirty. The condition began as an inflammation of my choroid, the thin layer of blood vessels that nourish my retina. Then it spread to my retina, affecting both my peripheral, or side vision, and my central vision, the cells which enable me to see fine lines, colors, and details. None of what is affecting my vision is visible to people looking at me normally. An eye doctor has to dilate my pupils and look through them into the backs of my eyes with bright lights in order to see the inflammation and its effects. The condition is called birdshot because the scattered lesions in my eyes are said to look like a spray of birdshot from a gun. My eye condition is a rare disease and is considered to be a result of autoimmune processes. It may flare up and subside at intervals, but it is worrisome because it causes cumulative damage to my eyes over time. The retina has been likened to the film in a camera. When light hits it, it registers an image transmitted to the brain via the optic nerve. When the inner architecture of the eyes is disturbed, in my case because of swelling and because the sensitive receptor cells, the rods and cones, have been inflamed, the outer images are also changed. I see odd effects, such as those I first noticed last spring when the grills on the cars began to look bent and people's faces started looking blurred and washed out, and when the print on the pages appeared increasingly broken and small. The changes I started noticing last spring jolted and frightened me, but they also made me think a great deal about what vision is. Do I see with my eyes or with my mind? I wondered. When I lose my vision, must I change my vocabulary, eliminating all the words to do with sight? Am I truly disadvantaged with less eyesight, or simply different? When my visual world changes, when I see curved lines instead of straight ones, and faces without fine line detail, when I mistake a ponytail on a woman's head for a parrot on a man's shoulder and think a road sign is a prehistoric monster, is what I see now distorted and lacking, or only different? How can I keep from making my vision loss into something that makes me feel I am less valuable as a person? How, too, I have wondered, can I not see myself in the terms of the medical world, in which a loss of eyesight is viewed as a failure? How can I not see myself as a set of failed eyes, but rather as a whole person? There is no effective treatment for my eye condition. Steroid shots and immunosuppressant drugs have been used, but the condition returns as soon as any treatment is stopped, and there are dangerous side effects. Thus, my situation is both uncertain and frightening. I hold out a hope that, miraculously, I will one day get better. I will wake up one morning and my eyes will see well again. I will look in the mirror to put in my earrings and be able to see the small holes where the post should go. I will see Hannah's face clearly. I will no longer have to grasp banisters tightly when I walk down steps. I will be able to read unaided. The world will again be full of true, vivid colors and much clarity of definition. But I must expect not to see that well again, because mine is most likely a chronic and progressive condition. My eye doctor, a retinal specialist whom I like, once told me that my bird shot would eventually burn itself out. It was a question of how much of my vision it would take with it. At a later time, he told me he thought the condition would not burn out in my case. There is that indeterminacy. There is also the image. When my eye doctor used the word burn, it made me feel there was a fire in my eyes. It is a painless fire in that my eyes do not hurt inside from the inflammation at the back of them, although sometimes I feel sore externally from straining my muscles in order to see. such as when I drive, or read a lot, or am tired. Having an eye condition that causes a loss of vision is something new for me. It is old in that I have had physical difficulties before, such as chronic migraine headaches and arthritis, and I have long struggled with emotional dilemmas that can make life a challenge. My vision loss seems to me similar to those experiences, in that I must accommodate it and take it into account in all that I do. It is different in that it seems to me more glaring, more obvious, perhaps easier to understand. It is also different because it is considered by the culture or larger world as more serious and more of a loss. I know I feel it as a loss, and I fear it will be a loss. But I also feel it as a change. I feel it puts me into the world of people who have less than normal vision, and it seems to me there will be some comfort for me in that, although as of yet, I am still quite alone. Definitely, my vision loss is a life change for me. I feel I am walking off into a new space, entering into an exciting adventure. I can put a positive face on what I am experiencing, and often I do. But it is also important for me to acknowledge my fears, the destruction in the world that I see visually, and the losses I feel. When the Point Reyes National Seashore burned several years ago, and I went there after the fire, I watched the landscape change. The rolling hills became bright green and clear. New grasses grew, free of the overbrush that had kept the sunlight from them for years. Bare, blackened tree trunks stood like sculptures against the sky. Tall yellow flowers tossed about in the wind by the roadside, the sea stretching out looking glassy behind them. There was an exquisite clarity all around me. I saw a different picture than I had before the fire. I cannot see that same picture at Point Reyes now, both because the external scenery has changed once again. The ground scrub has grown back thicker and duller in color, and the once silhouetted black trees have weathered and turned gray, blending back in, and because my internal vision has changed. The blue irises I now look at in the spring on the hills that slope toward the ocean are blurred. I have to take out my binoculars to see them. I have to take out my binoculars at the beach to see the waves and to see any detail in the white foamy breakers. The large forms and colors of sand dunes and green meadows surround me as I walk on a path toward the beach. I sit in a crevice among the dunes, surrounded by scattered clumps of low-lying white flowers, a garden of beauties I can barely see. I am going to have to grow accustomed to this new world I am in, if indeed it keeps being mine, and to find and delight in my place in it.